Good evening. Welcome to the Salieri Report. Today's October 15th, 2015. I'm Catherine Austin Fitz, and I'm delighted you could join me this evening. Well, we have a great luncheon coming up this weekend on Saturday in Amsterdam. So I hope if you're coming, we look forward to seeing you. If not, we've got a great group. There's still time, so encourage your friends. We've still got spaces open. If they're in Amsterdam, they need to come on by. Sunday brunch, we had a wonderful subscriber from the UK email and say, is Catherine ever going to have lunch in the UK? So we went back and said, she's in Edinburgh on October 25th. We'll have Sunday brunch. So he's coming and I'm coming and we'll see who else shows up. The Secret Space Program Conference, again, October 31st and November 1st outside of Austin, Texas. Turns out it looks like it's going to be a very significant gathering. The ticket sales have been good, and it's an incredible group. A lot of media coming. It's going to be an honest conversation. Our theme tonight is the global order. I wanted to read to you a paragraph from a piece at Stratfor, who I think does a very good job of sort of proposing and outlining the U.S. position on many things, or the pro-U.S. position. It had a piece, Stratfor had a piece called Framing China's Future. I just wanted to read you the opening paragraph. What will China's role be in the international order 5, 10, or 15 years from now? This is undoubtedly one of the defining questions in global affairs today, because whichever way we attempt an answer, whether we expect China power to grow or to diminish and how, will say a great deal about our expectations, not only for China as a state and society, but also for the future of international political, economic, and institutional systems. A world in which Chinese power continues to expand and in which Chinese-led international institutions proliferate and take root would be very different from one in which China recedes from the geopolitical limelight or acquiesces to the norms of the existing order. For this foreseeable future, the People's Republic, for all its constraints, will remain one of the few states credibly challenging the political, economic, and military supremacy of the United States, as well as the legitimacy of the U.S. designed and led international order. To question China's trajectory is therefore tantamount to asking whether and in what form the current order will persist. Very astute comments. We talked in the annual wrap-up, and if you're a new subscriber and haven't read it, I really encourage you to go back and read the annual wrap-up. We addressed this issue of the global order and the rebalancing of the global economy. I think it's one of the most important issues right now of our time. I've also talked a lot about Richard Haass's excellent article called The Unraveling, about the unraveling of the Bretton Woods system and what replaces it. Obviously, there are many different visions. Some of the driving forces contributing to what a world where the Bretton Woods systems unravels and we move to what's called a multipolar world. We've spent a lot of time this year looking at the different driving forces. It's one of the reasons for some of the book reviews I've been doing, whether on mercenaries, aka private armies, or financial sanctions, or other forms of invisible weaponry and soft revolutions. These are all techniques for preserving the current order in new ways. How this evolution is going to occur is very much on the world's mind this year, and it comes up again and again in all the different stories we cover or you see on the website, whether it's the debate on the SDR system, the Americans pushing for TPP, and getting ready to push for the trade services and transatlantic partnerships, the Russian and Chinese launching their own payment systems, new story this week about the Chinese launching their payment system, or the Pope lobbying for climate change as we come into the Paris conference in December on climate change. So what is this global order going to look like? What will emerge? G7 has one vision, the BRICS have another, and the general conversation lacks an open conversation about what is really going on. One of the goals of the group gathering at the Secret Space Program is to continue to inspire that conversation about what is really going on. We need a positive vision of how the world systems can evolve from here, and how we can continue to both cooperate and build wealth together. And that can only happen as transparency grows about what's really going on. Well, let's take a look at the markets. It's certainly been interesting. The U.S. dollar, woo, down, down, down. It's now at 93.96. So it's now up 3.68% for the year after being, heading over 100. So it's really dropped back down, and it's getting close to that all-important line of 92. Take a look. I'm going to refer several times tonight to the Rambus interview that we did. It's just sensational. But of course, the U.S. dollar index is the key, one of three key indicators, and I think the most important one to keep an eye on. So I won't say more about the U.S. dollar index, but encourage you to read that interview and listen to my audio that I do to introduce you to that interview this evening. S&P now down 3%, 3.14%. I'm using the Wednesday close because, of course, I'm in Amsterdam. And then gold, now it's been coming up, and now it's the equivalent of flat for the year, with silver up 2.4% for the year. Silver a bit stronger. It had gotten hit much harder. Again, in the interview with Rambus, we look at the S&P and the price of gold and the interrelationships between the dollar, the S&P, and gold. Anyway, great interview with Rambus. Please, I can't encourage you enough to read that. The DAX, the German index, now up 1% for the year. China large caps are come back a lot. They're down 7.5% for the year. The small caps pretty much back almost to flat. And then the developed markets, that's all the G7 or the developed markets away from North America, now down 1% for the year. The emerging markets down 10%. That's still where the great risk lies. And of course, bonds flat. Bonds have had a good week. The long treasury now down 1% for the year. Oil, down 30% for the year, still down there. And commodities down 13%, a little bit of a bounce in commodities, but still a plunging year still for commodities. Financial institutions are pushing for more QE both here and in Europe. Let's see if they get it. If they do, it's likely to be good news for the equity markets. Getting that QE is part of the reason for more crash warnings, along with, and the reality is we do have global slowdown. We're seeing all sorts of predictions of growth cut across the board, whether it's the IMF or different financial institutions. And, of course, the debt problems is weighing on the commodities producer and the commodity-producing countries, particularly the emerging markets. So under the category of who says the American people are not smart, there's a new survey by researchers at Chapman University that Times highlighted. I've put a link up on the website. The number one fear of Americans right now is corruption of government officials. And that they have very good reason. That should be their number one fear. Let me go through what the top, and what's remarkable is I think Americans should be much more afraid about these things than they are. 58% of Americans are concerned about corruption of government officials. 45% are concerned about cyber terrorism. 45% concerned with corporate tracking of personal information. Only 41% concerned about government tracking. People are smart. They know who they should worry about. Terrorist attacks, 44%. I would change the name on that to false flags. Biowarfare, 41%. So clearly somebody is worried about the fact that somebody's spraying aluminum on our heads. Identity theft, 40%. Economic collapse, 39%. Running out of money in the future, 37%. Credit card fraud, 37%. Now, what's interesting is if you look at how much money and time the Solari operation has paid out dealing with cyber-terrorism, corporate and government tracking of personal information, identity theft, and credit card fraud, either fraud or prevention thereof, this certainly fits with our experience. I can't tell you how much money we spend on dealing with cyber-terrorism. It's extraordinary. Not good news for anybody who wants to raise interest rates. The U.S. consumer is not spending. The retail sales down in August, now again down in September. As I talked about in the third quarter equity report, the U.S. consumer was the sort of strongest part of the market. What I can't understand, and I've really tried, is why anyone would think that consumer spending was going to be positive in the face of what's been hitting the consumer, whether it's online shopping, sort of hitting local income, student loans, Obamacare. To me, Obamacare was a massive attack on discretionary income in American households. Then, of course, Common Core. Robotics are set up to hit, a big part of local GNP. I just don't get it. I don't get how you can continually hit local income and earnings again and again and again and think that the retail consumer is going to have much life left into them. Obviously, there are real concerns about corporate earnings as we come into the third quarter earning reports. But I wouldn't underestimate how much the possibilities of the Trans-Pacific Partnership will bolster people's expectations about earnings. I think that was one of the clear reasons it was pushed through, is to protect corporate earnings. While clearly the U.S. economy is slower than the Fed expected, I still think it's too early to declare a recession. Let's see what happens in the fourth quarter. I put up on the website the wiki commentary on the Paris Conference on Climate Change, sponsored by the UN. I think it's part of what the Pope was pushing for, a global deal on climate change. And I'm just going to say what I always keep saying, which is, until we've had a transparent conversation about global spring, what's in it, HARP, and weather warfare, this is not a conversation I respect. And it's not people who push for climate change systems without having an honest conversation about these issues. To me, it's just a lot of social science, junk science, and mind control. And it can be very infuriating. Anyway, it's designed to give more power to the people who are currently behaving in inhumane ways, and it will simply give them the ability to increase their inhumanity. And I, for one, am not for that. I also put up a commentary I wrote, it's subscriber only, called Promoting Women, Part 7. I've been doing a Promoting Women series for about a year. I took a hard look a long time ago at what do we need to bring about real change, real solutions. And the greatest single solution I discovered was we needed to build a culture where women and men give each other energy, because right now the divide and conquer is tearing us apart. And of all the divide and conquers that do the most harm, it's turning men and women against each other. Well, if Mr. Global has his way, it's about to get much worse. Let me explain why. A U.S. Trust executive gave an interview to Business Insider, which I alluded to in the commentary Promoting Women, Part 7, describing the fact that gender equality was such a big issue. Essentially, what they said is the GNP of the global female consumer is $15 trillion, which is larger than all of China. And if that $15 trillion can build brand loyalty to the U.S. first and foremost, it will help America essentially stay a superpower. And it's important to understand that the opportunities for one-on-one marketing facilitated by digital systems, smartphones, and entrainment technology makes playing the women card down to a one-on-one level globally, it makes a huge amount of economic sense. McKinsey had a new study that the article, the interview with U.S. Trust Officer references, but I also had it up on the website as well. The McKinsey Global Institute study concludes that as much as $28 trillion could be added to the global annual GDP into 2025 if women in the world played an identical role in labor markets as men. Now, the U.S. establishment has had unbelievable success in sort of playing the women card in terms of trying to sort of pull the rug out from under all sorts of local institutions, whether it's family, tribe, church, or small business, by playing the women card. I mean, this has been going on for decades, but now they want to take it to a global level. And I think it's one of the reasons they're pushing so hard for female candidates for president. But anticipate that this is going to go along with mobile marketing. Watch for words like personal empowerment as personal information flows into the databases behind the one-way mirror, and in entrainment technology flows out via handheld devices. What's important to understand is that if you look at what happened with Obama, you took a young, cool black guy pushing hope, And by making him president, you engineered $27 trillion of bailouts, which contributed to, I believe, $40 trillion safely engineered into the banks and the black budget, successfully competing, in essence, the financial coup d'etat. And then on top of it, he's re-engineered healthcare and education in all the ways we've talked about. He's given a pretty face to genocide in the Middle East and Africa and U.S. minority communities. It's continued. And now he's getting the TPP pushed through. So playing the black card worked, and I think the U.S. establishment has a great desire to double up now on the woman thing. And what this means is... you know, for anybody who's interested in good governance, as you know I am, this is going to be particularly gruesome to watch, but it's important to understand and understand that this is part of what's happening with the current U.S. presidential elections. Speaking of which, I can't fathom why anyone pays attention to the campaigns. Obama has proved, well, every candidate for the last 20 years, but certainly Obama has proved beyond a shadow of a doubt that what a candidate says is completely irrelevant to the policies that will be implemented if they're elected. And our paying attention just affirms Mr. Global's belief that we are stupid and can be played. So it contributes to the cycle of disrespect. The reason I harp on this is it's very important to me that you don't let the political divide and conquer games rolling out through the media use sex or race to interfere with your giving and getting energy from those around you and the people you love. As I said, we have to build a culture where we give each other energy. I also want to put in a plug for saving time by ignoring the federal campaigns. Another post put up on the website this week, America's Fading Footprint in the Middle East, a very good overview piece from the Wall Street Journal about the fact that the U.S. really is reducing its commitment to the Middle East. The reality is the Iran deal is now done. We have enormous energy stockpiles domestically. We're pulling in our horns for a variety of reasons, not including or among which is the federal budget. It's amazing the news about Russia and Syria and Syria and Russia. It's all a bit over the top. It looks to me like there's far more cooperation on this move behind the scenes than folks realize. The world's two largest arms dealers are taking turns displaying their wares. We still have, as the Wall Street Journal points out, 45,000 troops in the Middle East, which is a very significant ongoing investment. But there's no doubt, as we've said before, given our improvement in domestic oil and gas self-sufficiency, you know, this is going to be a whole new day for the Middle East. I wonder how much of this has anything to do with the defense budget wrangling that's coming up with serious debt limit problems. We're 3 weeks away from having some pretty serious cash flow problems. And it's one reason why no one is eager to be the majority leader in the House right now. They're about to get clobbered by the red button problem. If you don't know the red button problem, I strongly recommend you go to Solari, or you can just do a general search for my name and the red button problem, and you'll get our video that explains the red button problem. It's one of my most famous stories. But it's a great sort of cameo to help you understand the challenges with the federal budget. Anyway, but the world's a little bit in shock as the U.S. recedes from the Middle East. European refugees, we got a very interesting comment from a subscriber in Croatia, once again reminding all of us that it's a much more complex phenomena than we often discover in the press. Anyway, I would encourage you to read that. I think it's very good. I wanted to bring up a new term that I'd never heard before, and it was in one of the articles I posted this week. It's called, the term is social science. It's social silence is our silence on a subject where we all agree to be silent because it's not socially acceptable, particularly when we're personally benefiting from something unpleasant, such as war or violence or, you know, or we're quiet on scary things. So if our, we had one subscriber write in and this week to describe the targeting of the Carolinas with weather warfare or, you know, topics like mind control and entrainment that I keep harping on. Anyway, but there's terrible social silence about these, and it really reached – the social silence reached new and gruesome levels with the Pope's visit and the attention of the presidential campaign. Someone asked me this week, what can we do? And there are many things that we can all do. You know, which ones are appropriate for you very much depend on your unique circumstance. But certainly there are three things we can all do. The first is we can pray and meditate. Prayer and meditation really open up new possibilities and pathways and really do shift and change things. And it's something you can do while you're driving down the highway in the car. It's something you can do while you're lying down and just about to take a nap. I'm a great believer in praying without ceasing. You can do it while you're cleaning your house. But praying is something we can all do, and I think it can make extraordinary differences. The second thing we can do is break the social silence. Just don't go along with it. Bring the topic up, or just don't play along when people want to pretend these things don't exist. The other thing we can do that's very, very powerful is shun people in enterprises who harm others and support people in enterprises who give energy to others. Shunning is unbelievably powerful. Get up from the Christmas table. If you discover somebody at your table who's from Goldman Sachs, just get up and say, you know, I will not eat with you. Let's make it socially unacceptable to be a bad guy. We have to go, if we're going to bring about real change, we have to go with the governance structure and the money. So local elections matter. Anything to do with money matters. The culture matters. Federal elections only make incremental differences. They're just show and tell and which faction gets the pork, but they don't bring about real change. Although I have to tell you, if 300 million Americans and ignore the federal elections completely, that would bring about real change. So we're going to have to shift the culture and the money in a manner that shifts the machinery. Look at the things that have worked. Gun control has been stopped. Homeschooling is a perfect example of the tapeworm getting backed up. And then, of course, the failure of swine flu vaccines. So and now the revolution on GMOs in Europe. I mean, we're watching the machinery get backed up again and again, but it's when people really move to action at the intimate level. Ask Catherine. Catherine, in your various discussions, you refer to Mr. Global. Who specifically are you referring to? I hear and read a lot about an elite group of people which have come together to reduce the world's population, build bunkers, camps, etc., put people in. Is this fear porn, as you call it, or is there real truth to this possibility? Can you speak to what you believe their agenda really is and who these people really are? I did a two-part series called The Breakaway Economy and then a two-part series with Dr. Farrell called Breakaway Civilization, Part 1 and 2. And I would really encourage you to listen to those four. I think those have all my best thoughts on these topics. And yes, I believe a lot of that stuff is fear porn. I think it's a lot easier to mind control people through smartphones than it is to round them all up and put them in FEMA camps, which is very expensive. Let's see. Catherine, you mentioned in many of your interviews about the location-based databases and tools you created in your private company. But would it be possible to create an open-source version of this, maybe with a distributed peer network as its base, so it wouldn't be stolen or taken down like a place-based transparency, Craigslist or such? Maybe even have an Indiegogo or Kickstarter campaign to fund the start. Certainly it's possible. There are lots of different, you know, there's an infinite combination of ways of doing it. I'm not up on the GIS mapping tools, but clearly wiki software could be very, very helpful with definitions and all sorts of information. In fact, I tried to do something like this twice with wiki and just got hacked badly. Anyway, I'm now believing that it would be very good if we could do a lot of this offline. There's no reason small business groups can't get together or local groups can't get together and do this offline. In fact, in some respects, it may be better if they sneak around and conspire to use the information. The key is you want people who can use the information to affect a shift to local income and employment. And so, I think it's a great idea, but it's not something that we have the capacity at this point to do. But I think it needs to be done on a distributed, sort of out-of-control basis, not with a central point. Somebody wrote in a lovely comment. I just wanted to read it to you. I'm always surprised at my continually learning from you and your guests. This is truly PhD level material for understanding, surviving, and succeeding in today's world. Oh, I like that. I like the idea of succeeding in today's world. I love the Solari community and that the way outside the box topics are simply discussed and accepted as truth. Finally, a place where I feel like I'm walking among the sane. I woke up from the matrix in the middle of 1970s, but gradually fell back into it during the 1990s. Finally, when I saw Building 7 free fall for no apparent reason, the show was again cracked. I began looking for answers, found Catherine Austin Fitz, and been living in reality ever since. The process was many times scary because my old heroes truly were not. Actually, many were villains, but when it came to talking with others about these things, I was simply put into the conspiracy box. Ah, there is the social silence again. And my points of view, no matter how I back them up with real facts, were summarily dismissed. I realized that when our heroes become zeros, we have to find a new paradigm, toss out most of the fairy tales we've learned, think for ourselves, and find new communities to hang with. Thank you, Catherine. Oh, thank you. The more we can support each other, truly, the better off it is. One of the things I'll say, we are going to have another luncheon in New York with Richard Dolan, and I've never seen a group of people have more fun. 45 highly intelligent, highly capable people discovering 44 other people just like themselves. It was really remarkable to behold. You've been sending in some great links and audios and videos, and I'm posting a lot of them. Thank you very much for your recommendations. Two that I've posted before, but when I saw them again, I thought, oh, they're so good, I'm going to put them up again. One was a quick excerpt from a wonderful movie called My Dinner with Andre. It's really funny. You have to see it. And then Daniel Amen, Change Your Brain, Change Your Life, a great TED speech from California. And we put that up. And there's nothing like taking care of your precious brain. Very good recommendations in there. Dear Catherine, during the time of our founding fathers, corporations were very rare and most businesses were small businesses. In your opinion, how much of the increase in oppression and the taking away of our rights as people has to do with the rise of both corporations and their power? I would say that, you know, yes, centralization is a problem, but the biggest part is the growth of the covert operations, the black budget, and intelligence agencies, invisible weaponry, and sort of systematic organized crime on scale. I'm not saying the overt corporations are perfect and don't contribute to the centralization of power, but, you know, Starbucks is not running around killing people. That you know, I leave that to the people who are running organized crime. And so I think the problem, centralization of the economy is definitely a problem. But I think it's the covert side that has been the, you know, the most dangerous and the most painful. Clearly, if we had a much richer small business community, it would be a very significant improvement. And the reality is, if you look at the reasons, the things that have driven small business out of business, it has nothing to do with economics. It has to do with dirty tricks in the application of the covert side, as well as a pretty negative loop between campaign contributions and all the things that government can do through the budget or regulation to consolidate market share locally into big corporations. But it's more than just that. There was a great piece in the New York Times that I posted on the website called An Alpeng Antidote to Working Weekends. As a wonderful woman who'd worked in Switzerland for a long time and then came back as an American and tried to work in America, and she said, look, you know, in Switzerland, they let you have a month vacation and you don't have to work weekends and you can think and you can innovate because you're not exhausted all the time. And it's really an excellent description of the difference between a human culture and an inhuman culture. And there are many things that contribute to an inhuman culture in America, but I think that's our big challenge is how do we get back to a human world? And it's thousands of things, but it starts with bringing transparency to all this covert craziness. I also wanted to point out, if you haven't read my book, Dylan Reed and the Aristocracy of Stock Profits, which is up online, it really gives a great example of the vicious cycle between campaign funding and stock market. So I think that might help as well. Next question. You've mentioned for years that you've had concerns about joining any of the social media sites, and I see you're now on Twitter. What's the reason for the change? And what are your thoughts today on getting involved and participating in social media? I have a lot of concerns about most social media. People do want ticklers, which is why I've joined Twitter. You know, Twitter's broadcasting publicly, so there's not really compromise of private information the way there was in how Facebook was done. And I don't think Twitter, depending on how you use it, makes it easier or that much easier for you to track. Again, you're broadcasting publicly. You shouldn't be broadcasting publicly anything you want to keep private. I've also, if there's a social media that really helps grassroots politics, it's Twitter. I've seen Twitter affect a lot of very successful populist things. So of all of them, I'm the most comfortable with Twitter, which is why we're using that. And people have made it clear they want to be notified, and so we've started to use the Twitter feed. But thank you for asking. Our interview is with the great Rambus of Rambus Chartology. I won't spend any time talking about it. I did an audio introduction, and then Rambus, because of his dependency on charts, wanted to do it in writing. I encourage you so much to take a look at this. One of the reasons I hang at Rambus Chartology, I'm a subscriber and have been for quite a while, is he does a remarkable job of really tracking and focusing on the important indicators. And the three most important indicators that I follow regularly every day is the U.S. dollar, the S&P 500, and the price of gold. And Rambus does a remarkable job of taking a look at those charts. And I think that interview is one that can really help you navigate the fourth quarter, not just in the financial markets, but to help you really understand and map your world. So listen to the audio, read the interview. It's excellent. Okay, in closing, next week we have the third quarter wrap-up. You know how I love the wrap-ups. We're going to be talking about the Chinese markets because the Chinese stock market is at the very heart of the turn in the global order. So we're going to be talking about the Chinese stock market, what's happened this year, and what may be ahead for the Chinese stock market and why it's important. I'll be covering the top stories of the third quarter, and of course we'll have the presentation on the financial markets that we did for the third quarter equity overview. And then the following week, a great interview with Dr. Joseph Farrell, where he reacts to what we've been discussing on the wrap-up, and I'll be talking with him about those issues and more. And then on November 5th, a great interview with entrepreneur Jason Bowden-Smith on the Entrepreneur's Call to Action. We're talking about how entrepreneurship really works, not how it works the way they say in the magazines. Anyway, so until next week with the third quarter wrap-up, again, our theme, Chinese stock markets, please remember, don't worry about whether or not there is a conspiracy. If you're